Welcome to the Innate Vitality Code podcast, your source of science-backed information and inspiration on holistic healing, building resilience, trauma recovery, and self-love. I'm your host, Dr. Andrea Pennington. I'm an integrative physician, acupuncturist, and positive psychology neuroscience nerd. For over 20 years, I've been healing and teaching in my wellness practice, in the media, on stages, and around the world, as part of my soul's mission to end suffering and raise the consciousness on the planet. This podcast does not provide medical advice or psychotherapy. Consult your healthcare provider before implementing what you hear on this show. Hello, hello, beautiful soul. How are you? I wanted to connect with you to share yet another aspect of my life. And it's really been quite a journey, actually. It's a journey toward really embracing all of me, my fears, my doubts, my shadow, and embracing all of what I believe is turning out to be my destiny in life. And it's kind of a big deal for me because I'm a recovering perfectionist, to be honest. Like, I was basically kind of a control freak, a rule follower. Now, in many ways, that has served me really well. Being a medical doctor and kind of studying science, understanding how the mind and the body works, and being able to prescribe treatments for people, and then eventually transitioning into integrative medicine, where I could bring my Chinese medicine training and spirituality and positive psychology and integrating it in such a way that I could design treatment plans for my patients, where I'm wearing both hats, you know, the integrative hat from Chinese philosophy and psychology, as well as the traditional medicine hat, which actually gave my patients like a lot of comfort. Because then they knew nothing was going to be missed, you know? They could get to the edge of trying things that were a little bit holistic or alternative without feeling like they were totally going against conventional wisdom. But part of this journey from being a perfectionist, living in that box of conformity to where I am today, which is truly embracing all of me, including the stuff that science is only just being able to scratch the surface on, has been quite a convoluted kind of little trip. And in fact, I'm going to share with you a little bit about another mystical part of my journey that I haven't shared publicly very much. And that has to do with psychedelics and plant medicine from more of a research perspective and a medical perspective. So it may actually be hard to believe, given that doctor, you know, left brain, conformist, perfectionist, it may be hard to imagine that I would even give up control or accept that some magical plant would be able to take me on a mystical journey. And I'm talking about ayahuasca and magic mushrooms. But what I've come to understand, and maybe you'll come to see it as well, this is actually a natural part of my life journey, and it's what everything has been leading me up to, is truly integrating all of what the best of science, you know, modern science and ancient wisdom and wisdom from Mother Earth herself, to help us all reconnect to our true selves, the authentic self or essential being. And so, along with my perfectionism, I dealt for many years with imposter syndrome. I was that type A aggressive person, and to be honest, I didn't really have very many successful relationships. I was kind of cold and prickly and just, you know, kind of a bottom line thinker. But at the height of my thriving media career, while I was still running my wellness center in the United States, I experienced some of the darkest days and nights of depression and isolation, and I used to wake up with anxiety. I never like felt good about myself. I was constantly striving for more approval and acceptance through more and more accomplishments. It was like never ending. And so I was constantly trying to be good enough and trying to be perfect. Can you relate? Well, in my case, none of it ever worked. I always felt like a fraud. It was as if I was afraid that someone was going to find out that I wasn't smart enough, that I didn't know enough, that I wasn't prepared enough, that I just wasn't enough. And in 2005, when I hit rock bottom, I was in total despair when I cried out to God to take my life. Now, I had already made a vow or made a deal with my soul and whatever comes after. I made a deal to not take my own life. And so in 2005, when I was, you know, completely desperate, I asked God to do it. And that's when I had that out-of-body, near-death-like experience where I literally thought God was answering my prayer. Now, I've described this in my TED Talk, in my books. It's online, so I'm not going to make you hear that whole story again. But just know that in the end, when I said yes to life, I was shown this beautiful vision of a future that was so totally appealing to me, where I was told I was the one to be able to choose what I would do with this life force that I've been gifted with. And so when I returned to my body and I was completely free of the like crippling depression and anxiety, like I had to make sense of what happened to me. And I've said this before, I really just dove into the neuroscience research because I had never known anyone to have an out-of-body experience or a near-death experience without being sick, on the operating table, in a coma, an accident, or anything like that. And so it led me to understand more about consciousness. I went on shamanic retreats. I started really developing all of my own spiritual practices that led me to the understanding that what happened to me was a true spiritual awakening, a reconnecting with my soul, a coming home to my authentic self. And I found that we are all capable of this type of awakening and evolution. If I am, then you are. You still got a brain and you still got a soul. I'm going to get to the neuroscience part of this because it's pretty epic. So all of that experience taught me that we are all worthy of love just as we are. We don't need to strive for perfection to feel accepted. We can actually access our soul or the essential being anytime we want so that we can connect to our life purpose. And that means that we can take control of our lives. And it means that we can enjoy a life of meaning and fulfillment. And we don't have to suffer like so many of us are suffering and like I was suffering. And I know that might seem a little bit simplistic, but that's what I experienced. And through my study, I recognized that there are these common pathways that multiple other cultures lead their tribes and their people through to reconnect with the self if you've lost it through conditioning and conformity. And I put all of that in this book, The Real Self-Love Handbook, the entire process of awakening and evolution is called the Cornerstone Process, and it's in this book. Now, a lot of people have asked, like, okay, you had some out-of-body experience, a connection with the divine, that must be why you just snapped out of it, but that's a rare miracle thing. You know, did you have any struggles getting back into regular life? Well, yeah, because even though I came back into connection with my authentic self, I also came back into a regular old human body, along with the mental apparatus that comes with it, i.e. the ego. And what I discovered is that I still had some healing to do. Like my original wound came, at least in this lifetime, part of that came when my parents got divorced. My mother and father moved into separate states. So we were in Colorado, my dad was in Nevada, There was no Skype or FaceTime, so it was just the telephone and seeing my dad a couple of times a year. But prior to that, my mom was in med school when she had me. And so my dad was the one that was like carrying me around, doing all the feedings, because he had more flexibility with his schedule. So when I think back, like, what must that have been like to go from being in his arms every day to not? And I know now that it created this psychological sense of abandonment. And that translated into a fear of abandonment and this sort of anxious, avoidant attachment style. We'll talk attachment styles later, but I recognize that early childhood experience still lingered in my subconscious mind. And some of the compensations and the coping mechanisms that I employed as a child caused me to sabotage relationships if things got too close. And so it took some undoing of that, even though I had connected with my soul and the divine, and I felt like I know now that I'm lovable. There was still some of that lingering in the subconscious. And so I ended up doing a lot of ongoing work in meditation, journaling, breath work, qigong, yoga. It was through all of these things that I really found relief and started building that sense of self again and creating that new pathway for my brain and my psyche to take hold of. And a couple of years after that awakening experience, I was on a shamanic retreat in Sedona, Arizona. This was like 2007. And I heard a call. I was listening to this shaman explain that it was a trance dance retreat, and that getting into the trance state, you know, he said that so many other cultures, through drumming, through chanting, through whirling and dancing, you could get into this trance state and access the soul, the subconscious mind, even the collective unconscious. And it was the first time that I heard someone in America talk about ayahuasca, this sacred plant medicine that comes, you know, from the jungle. And he was actually leading retreats in Hawaii and, you know, invited me to go and experience this amazing plant medicine. Because when I told him about my out-of-body experience, he said, oh, well, that happens a lot. It's very common, especially in traditions where there is shamanic work around. And so it was like, okay, everything that I'd heard up to that point about psychedelics, I mean, like from my teenage years, was like, no, like they get locked in your brainstem, it can make you crazy, you can go become schizophrenic. And then the other thing was like, oh no, there's like demons that could like attach to you, or because it's a hallucinogen. I was one of those people who grew up watching all kinds of scary movies. I'm like, who knows what my subconscious mind is full of? I didn't want that. So I heard this call, but I was scared. And I was not ready to give up that last little bit of control that I felt that I had to go on some journey with a sacred medicine plant from the jungle. I mean, it sounded like, wow, if I could have an additional experience like that, where I was so connected to the divine and felt so connected to my authentic self, I thought, yeah, that would be awesome. But I wasn't ready. It took 10 years. Like 10 years later, I heard that call again. But this time I happened to be in Peru. And it was just one of those times where I felt like the time was right. I happened to be there on a spiritual retreat with a group of people who we were doing other spiritual stuff. They weren't really into that stuff. In fact, some of the people that I was with didn't believe in plant medicine. They thought it was evil. They thought it was like just, I mean, they were totally against it. In fact, I felt like some of them were like more than just disapproving. They were like judgmental. But be that as it is, I, at this beautiful retreat center, I had spoke with a group of people who were doing their yoga teacher training, and they had already done a few ceremonies where they had this beautiful shaman who came in from the jungle and she led the ceremony. And it just, it sounded like magical. It didn't sound scary at all. And that's when I was like, I'm all the way over here. I'm in Peru. I'm going to try this because like my daughter was away. Like I had like the space and the time. I felt safe. And I felt like, you know, being in a place with beautiful, loving people and who were skilled and knowledgeable, who'd done it before with a legit shaman, that was like, yeah, that just made a big difference for me. It felt like this was my time to actually take that leap. And so, you know, it wasn't the simplest of things to do because I was with another group. But I wasn't the one teaching on this retreat. So I went ahead and followed something they call a dieta. It's a diet. And I'm already vegan, so that was pretty easy. Basically, with the dieta, you're not doing any drugs, obviously. Sugar, alcohol, caffeine, certain spicy foods, no meat, no dairy. So really clean, but I was already doing that. So that part was very easy. But then on the day of the ceremony itself, you know, I just stuck to liquids. I think I had a really light breakfast with my peeps. And then, you know, I just kept kind of watching the yoga tribe saying, I'm with you guys tonight. As of tonight, I'll be with you. I spent a lot of time in silence and meditation. And so I felt like totally ready for what Mother Aya was going to show me. And, you know, there were, again, people who said I shouldn't do it and they were worried and all of that sort of stuff. But it was my decision and I felt really ready for it. I mean, it had been bubbling in my consciousness for the last 10 years. So getting to this beautiful sacred ceremony, it was amazing because, I mean, they had created in this big kind of yoga yurt kind of thing. We each had our own mattress and pillows and blankets and tissues and a bucket. I admit the taste of this tea. I mean, they're brewing a couple of different roots and leaves. I'll put all of the details. You can find details on exact species name of the plant, but they make this kind of thick tea, which was not pleasant. It was not great, but you know, I drink it down like a champ, and the purging, the vomiting, the puking, it was awful. And I'll be honest, puking is like my least favorite thing to do in the world. Like, I was so thankful that I had no morning sickness during pregnancy. Okay, ladies out there, don't shoot me. In fact, I didn't actually vomit until the day that I went into labor. But anyway, I definitely felt like the purging, like getting ready for like what was gonna happen, you know, it was like going through all of the vomiting, I was just kind of waiting, like, okay, it's a hallucinogen, so I'm like, what am I gonna see, you know? But I got to get kind of settled on my mattress, got through all of the puking, and I remember looking outside and seeing the trees. And it was as if they came alive. Well, okay, of course they were already alive, but it was as if I could see how alive they were. And it was as if the trees sort of leaned in, offering like protection. So I just felt protected because, you know, previously I was afraid of seeing like some demons or some other weird creatures. You know, I was nervous that maybe as this the medicine would take effect, that there would be, you know, scary hallucinations, but that actually wasn't the case for me. My first ayahuasca experience was the most beautiful, life-affirming experience. And I've shared previously that my mother, who is a big reason that I became a doctor and an acupuncturist, we worked together. She has been so supportive of all of the aspects of me, the artistic me, as well as the nerdy medical me and the entrepreneurial me. But over the last several years, she has succumbed to Alzheimer's. And so she's not always fully present. But during this ayahuasca experience, I was able to connect with my mom and have a conversation with her. And I know that sounds kind of weird, but it was, for me, so real and so cathartic and so such a blessing. I was able to actually honor her and thank her for her influence in my life. And I also, during this experience, reconnected with my inner teenager. And we both kind of like, I had this adult and teenager experience of kind of like grief and regret for the drama I put my mom through when I was a teenager. It was just like, we both were able to like apologize for the rebellious rage that that was my teenage experience. And we were able to cry it out and hug it out with so much forgiveness and compassion. And I was also shown some new visions. And I felt like at that point, I was even more sure of my life purpose. Like, I thought even after my first near-death-like experience in 2005, like, I've been on purpose. But so much more has unfolded since then that I felt like just so much clarity. And so, I don't know, I saw new aspects of my business at that time. Actually, new aspects of my business were shown to me that have since come true. And it's only been, 2 years. I also felt through this kind of inner child journey, the connection with my mom, like seeing the whole of my life, understanding that original wound from my mom and dad's divorce, I felt like that healing allowed me to say yes to love and to open my heart to the possibility of being in a true, deeply committed soul relationship. So this was a big deal for me. And soon after my time in Peru, I met a teacher who has become a very dear friend of mine. And she said that being under the influence was something that would open up new connections in my brain. And that kind of stuck with me because in my travels, I've been really interested to understand like the neuroscience. Now, I explained this in another video that when I started researching to understand how you could have an out-of-body experience or near-death experience without the death part, I found out that there are certain parts of the brain that when stimulated will create the exact same experience that I had, that going into the light or that tunnel, that sense of the meanness kind of disappearing and becoming one, feeling of bliss and love, you know, hearing music, all of that is actually available in our brain wiring, which sounds crazy, except it's been reproduced all over the world. And so that part has really fascinated me, and it's something that I'll get to in a minute, but it's also something that I want to study more today, now that I'm into all of this neuropsychology and EEG, brainwave monitoring. But I met someone else who was showing us a healing technique from Australia. And this person said to me that with plant medicine, it could be very dangerous, that spirits could attach to you, that people have become like really possessed, for lack of a better word. But when I told him about my experience and how blissful it was and how there was no scariness and there were no demons, there was nothing like crazy like that, he said that it must have been that through all of my own preparation and journey work that my spirit was strong and was protecting me. So his kind of comments, though, did kind of put me off from like recommending this to other people. I mean, after my media career and medical career on television, like, I know that sometimes people listen to what I say. So I was like, I'm not going to be telling people about this. But it is true that if you have a lot of unresolved trauma, things from your childhood like I did, or if there are disowned parts of yourself, parts of you that are hidden in what, you know, psychologists call the shadow, and if you happen to have a vivid imagination, then yeah, you might end up with a pretty challenging journey of seeing your true self, of finally shining this light and seeing the shadow, really seeing this dichotomy between this ego or this programmed version of yourself and your essential self. But it was after meeting this other teacher that I mentioned, a beautiful shaman and medicine woman from Iceland named Sol Whitefire. It was with her that I understood that all of that shadow work, coupled with my meditation, you know, put me in a really good place to level up. And that's when I really kind of came back and realized, okay, what's happening in the brain? And so now that people are able to put EEG monitors on the head and see what brain waves are going on as the DMT, which is like one of the active substances in the ayahuasca plant, you can see that it's creating this beautiful synchrony and causing connections in the brain that were not there before. And like, I get it now. My level of creativity, my level of insight and intuition, you know, being able to do Qigong and distance healing, all of that has like skyrocketed since. And it's because I already had the capacities. It's just making these new connections in the brain. And so it was just, I guess, last year that I felt inspired and motivated to do another ayahuasca ceremony. And this time it was in Iceland with two shamans, and we also did a sweat lodge. And it's interesting though, because this was a very different experience. Now, I expected to have completely smooth sailing because I'm like all evolved, right? But my first of two journeys in Iceland last year, the first one was incredibly hard for me, I'll be honest. I was at one point able to see, like visually see, how my mind, or I, my ego, labels information. Like I could see it visually. That sort of sounds weird. It's almost like there was a tagging system, a tagging and labeling system, where I was seeing how I have judged, labeled, named, and tagged information and how it was stored in my subconscious mind. Now, at the time, that was a little bit discouraging because what I felt like was, oh my God, I'm so full of judgment. Like, I'm a judgmental bitch. Which kind of bugged me because I've been on this like very Buddhist path of non-judgment. But there's this interesting thing that happens with some psychedelics, and also even I've heard of this with MDMA, which is another class, but there's something that happens where you, as the conscious witness, get some distance where you can see the contents of your mind. And what was interesting is that in my experience, I saw everything. But because I'm sort of in this temporal, in this timeline thing where I think of present and past and future, I was seeing everything and I thought it was all present. I'm like, you have so much judgment, like Duray, damn. But what I understood later in processing is that no, I was seeing all of the contents, the judgments that had been made even in the past that I wasn't currently actively using. And, you know, I went through a period of time. The reason this experience was difficult this time was because I had so much resistance. And so if you ever do this stuff, the resistance is the worst thing. Resisting is the worst thing you could do, because it's like, it's what we do in our daily waking lives. We're always resisting our urges and our desires and knowing what we really should do. But I went through all of this self-judgment and resistance, trying to clear, like a scene would come up and I'd see all this judgment and I'd want to clear it. I'm like, just get it out of my face. I'm like, ayahuasca, I don't want this. Aya, get rid of it. And it wasn't until I was just exhausted that I finally surrendered. I literally had to like consciously say, Andrea, you've got to just surrender, which is really, really important. It's a very important theme when it comes to any of your spiritual work, but definitely with plant medicine, the resistance is the most painful. And so what I was basically shown was the origin of my judging behavior. It all lies in the ego, which in this sort of visual space was represented by a woman. And it was as if I could see her with like a clipboard, but she was visually in the basement, kind of this mental palace structure. She was in the basement, and she was just kind of like with her clipboard, just managing my life. And I was able to see how, yes, this ego part of me could be overgrown, like trying to control everything like I was in my early life, as I'd been like trained to become this aggressive, you know, type A perfectionist. But what I realized when I finally let go of judging it and just sat with it, then I could see her. And I, at first I was like, how do we get rid of her? How do we get her out of the basement? And once I let go, it was like, oh, she's managing my life, but her judgment is not the old judgment of good, bad, right, wrong. It's like, is this leading me towards peace and harmony in my life? Is this leading me towards following what I believe is my life path or not? And so the judging aspect of me as a human, when it's overgrown, it becomes controlling, it becomes perfectionistic, it's never enough. But the sense of, I guess we could call it discernment, that part of me that just knows this is a path that I'm feeling drawn to that will bring me harmony and peace, productivity in my life, and this is not. So I made peace with her. And then everything was better. Then the following night, I had a second trip, which was much more peaceful and full of insights. I mean, it's just like, it's like light bulb moments, these aha moments where you like, you see a scene from your life and you get it because you're not like so emotionally attached. At least that's how it was for me. And so all of these supporting guides and shamans that were there, they made this whole experience just perfect for me. And so also last year when I was on a separate visit to Iceland, I participated in a sacred ceremony, but this time with Icelandic mushrooms, magic mushrooms. And that too was a really good experience. It was much gentler physically and more of a fun kind of whimsical journey, like visually. I did receive some really mind-blowing insights while under the influence of the magic mushrooms or psilocybin. And I saw certain aspects of my life from these new and much more empowered perspectives, which, you know, I'll share that in another video. But I'm bringing all of this to say that I have decided to bring the wisdom of plant medicine to my online presence with my company, Innate Vitality, and to host and co-host retreats around the world. I'm not becoming a shaman. That path is a intense and arduous path that your soul really needs to be called for. But now, having worked with a few over the last 10 years, I'm like, yeah, I see the value of returning to this ancient wisdom from a variety of cultures. And I really feel like these sacred ceremonies bring on the healing benefits of being able to process trauma and connect with your essential being, connect with your life purpose, which is huge. And so you'll see that we are publishing a good bit of online resources. We'll also give links to the wonderful organizations who are out there already doing this work. I'm coming from a more medical perspective. I definitely think that, you know, doing a ceremony in a more clinical setting is okay. You'll hear, as you start to do research, you'll hear these two words, set and setting. Like, these are the most important things when it comes to psychedelics, really. Okay, well, of course, dosage. Dosage is important. Not too much, not too little, right? But dosage and set and setting. And so they're crucial to really having the most safe and beneficial experience with psychedelics. And that's why I do not recommend that you do any of this outside of a sacred ceremony or even these clinically guided practices with like trained, experienced professionals. This is crucial. I do not believe that you should be doing these in clubs or at parties. And in fact, that actually goes totally against what these sacred ceremonies, what this sacred plant, what each of these indigenous cultures, what they believe the plants are here to help us do. It like the concept of doing this in a club just makes no sense. But I do think that there is incredible value that we can tap into when we surrender our kind of Western way of thinking and embrace the wisdom that comes from these plants, we at Innate Vitality will be involved in some research going forward. Part of what we're doing with the Mind Mirror, the EEG-led meditations that help people to train their brain to get in these different states of consciousness. We know that with the EEG brainwave training, you can get into these expanded states of consciousness and create synchrony between these hemispheres of our brain, much like we know psychedelics do. So I want to be like part of this research of understanding what happens when someone takes part in a ceremony like this, what happens to their brainwaves before and after. We know from people that we've talked to so far that they have seen benefits that they were able to measure with this brainwave training. So anyway, gosh, I have been talking a lot longer than I anticipated. Oh my gosh. I just wanted to give you a bit of insight into how I got to this point, why I'm now co-hosting and facilitating the cornerstone process for my book at these shamanic and sacred retreats in Iceland, in Costa Rica. It's a part of the mix. You don't necessarily need plant medicine. Do I think it's for everyone? Probably not. But I think that the benefits of experiencing that deep connection with your true self and feeling that love that maybe you didn't get from your parents, or maybe you just have been denying it for yourself, there is great value in that, in helping you in your conscious evolution process. I mean, there's an awakening of consciousness that goes on when you do these types of practices, not just plant medicine, but the breath work, the yoga, trance dance, ecstatic dance, whirling, movement, all of it. It really, all of that is allowing you to get into states of consciousness that impact your brain, and they have lasting benefits. So I want to show you and share with you all of the things that I have experienced and that I've been researching. And it's up to you to decide. And yes, you can run it by your doctors and therapists. Definitely, if you have any psychological drama or trauma, if you have instability that most of the shamanic retreats would say, don't do it. Maybe some of the clinical retreats in various countries might let you come into it, but I think it's definitely not for you if you are currently dealing with any type of psychosis, severe depression. Like, there's some other things you can do to stabilize yourself before that, because part of the dieta that I said for psychedelics is you've got to be off medications. So I'll put a link to all of the information about that as well. But if you're curious, you can email me with questions. I will be doing many more interviews and podcast episodes around these topics so that you can talk to experts, people who have far more experience than me. I think over the coming years, I will be learning a lot and sharing it with you, but I want you to be informed. All right? So my dear friend, I hope that the one thing you can take out of watching this, thank you for sticking with me, is that your brain is wired for you to know the divine. You have the capacity to reach expanded, evolved states of consciousness that can lead you to healing, including self-healing, can lead you to more intuition and creativity and peak performance. And there are many, many pathways to get to those expanded states of consciousness. And I truly believe that you can become the master of your life force energy. And that's what I'm dedicated to bringing to you, all of the resources that will empower you to do just that. So until we meet again, please do remember that you are a gift to the world. So share your presence with passion. Much love. If you enjoyed this video, please click the like button and share it with someone else who needs some inspiration.
Be sure to subscribe to the channel and turn on the notification bell so you never miss a show. I'd love it if you follow me on social media, and check me out online if you'd like to hang out in person at one of the retreats or workshops that I host around the world.
Innate Vitality Code Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, rate the podcast, and subscribe. This helps me with getting my message out to a wider audience. For show notes and other episodes, visit innatevitality.com/podcast. That's vitality.com/podcast. You can also sign up for my free masterclass series. Each month, I take a deep dive into the topics of holistic healing, resilience, trauma recovery, and self-love. Just visit innatevitality.com.